Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to understand ourselves, deepen our relationships, and strengthen our emotional well-being. Thank you for tuning into Calm, Clear, and Helpful, the weekly podcast series introducing you to wellness professionals, offering their expertise and assistance. Today's topic is how intuition fuels purpose, aligned action, and self-confidence. If you've ever wondered how trusting your intuition and acting on it can lead to purpose and fulfillment, I'm sure today's episode will upgrade your quality of life. My guest is Benita Conde, advertising industry expert, coach, consultant, and founder at Create Radical Love from Richmond, Virginia in the U.S. Welcome, Benita.
Thank you, Mariëtte.
Could you please introduce us to the work you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I worked in the advertising industry for almost two decades in full-time roles in advertising agencies as well as a recruiting firm, and I worked predominantly with the folks in the creative disciplines. So art directors, copywriters, designers, producers, project managers, those really bringing the work to life. And I love working with creative people. I was a professional ballet dancer in my first life. So I really see the movement of people working together through like a choreographic lens. And I brought that with me into my work in the advertising industry and just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy working with like quote unquote creative people, though that's really expanded for me now in having my own business and coaching and consulting with lots of different types of people across different organizations. And we're all creative beings at our core. And I left that world, 9 years ago now, this month, which is amazing. I resigned from my last full-time role at an agency after really seeing that the way in which that system and structure operated was antithetical to how I was evolving and growing in my own life. I also had been sober for 10 years at that point and now almost 19 years. And my own personal development, self-development, spiritual development was really leading me to see that I had more choice than I had maybe come to believe. It's amazing what our limited beliefs will do in terms of locking us into things that aren't necessarily the truth, but that we come to believe, you know, are very real. And I took some steps. I knew from my time in recovery that asking for help, asking for outside help is really important to making personal change and that we don't have to do things alone. I learned through my journey in recovery much more about my intuition and trusting it when making aligned, healthy, more nourishing choices. I find the more you do that and the more that you take actions that are esteemable, you then develop self-esteem. I didn't really know that until my early 30s. I thought you sort of either had self-esteem and confidence or you didn't. And it turns out it comes from building it and doing esteemable acts and being consistent, showing up predominantly for yourself first. And then you can do that for others. I kind of had that flipped for a long time. And so I hired coaches around this time of realizing I wanted to make a big change, but I wanted to explore these limiting beliefs I realized I had. Like, I believed that I wasn't creative in my own right. I believed that I was really helpful at facilitating systems and structures and people and teams and putting systems and people together to support those with creative vision, but that I didn't have any myself. Which was wild because I'd been a dancer working with others to create art for, you know, the whole first part of my life until I was 21, 22. So it was really interesting to know I needed help to see past some of these really limiting beliefs, ask for that help, hire coaches, start working with them, leave a full-time environment so I could have some space to explore, because those beliefs had come from a system and structure that had projected them onto me, because that's how that system worked, you know, which is often what we need to do to be efficient and effective working in different environments, is assume the beliefs and the understanding of that system. Doesn't necessarily mean, of course, that they're right or aligned. And so I did that. And it's really still crazy to me that that is around 9 years ago at this time. And then out of it, a very surprising development came for myself as well as my coaches. And that was that I actually wanted to have my own business, which was another belief I told them right out of the gate. Like, I'm better working for others. I would never have my own business or company. That feels too, I don't know. I think I thought my nervous system couldn't handle that. Like, that I needed a very regular paycheck type of existence. It turns out totally not the case at all. Again, like, wild belief, right? And that, you know, we'll talk about this a lot when we're talking about intuition, but like, intuition versus fear-based beliefs. My intuition was clearly pulling me towards something new and different. And that felt scary to a certain degree, but more exciting than scary. But the fear-based beliefs, the limiting beliefs, were what was holding me back. And so that's always an interesting piece to tease out. And that's, again, why I hired coaches, because I needed an outside reflection to help me through some of that, to start to trust my intuition in this new way. And yeah, I ended up like 2 or 3 months into working with them, out of very deep meditation came, oh, this phrase I'd been working with, which was radical love, like unconditional love for myself and others. Well, I want to focus on that. And would I be able to do that in an existing system and structure, in a big existing organization? I was talking to a couple of places about big full-time, like chief creative talent officer type of roles as a next step. And that was exciting to the safety part of my brain and the part that's like, on paper, this looks good. And then my soul and my intuition and my gut and my heart would like shrink a little bit in considering it, because I knew I would come in with ideas and want to create change. And people would be excited about that probably for the first 6 months. And then they would want me to not do that anymore. Mm-hmm. and kind of get with the program of the system as it exists, you know, wanting to create change in big systems creates a lot of discomfort for people. And I just started to see that. I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to be right back in the same situation. So, maybe trust this excitement intuition that's coming, even though it's a little bit scary. Also, lean more and more and more into that and trust it. Have some faith, which that could be a whole nother hour conversation. And that's what I did. So I launched the business in the fall of 2017, predominantly focused on coaching individuals. Being that I had been a recruiter for many years in the industry, I had a lot of contacts. So that's something I'm always very transparent about, in terms of I had a pool of potential clients to engage with, like right out of the gate. And so I did. I started talking to a lot of people, and I had my first clients a couple weeks in from launching the business. And it just continued to be a really steady and balanced, flowing aspect of my life. I made sure from the get-go, I put a structure around how many hours I really wanted to engage in this type of work with clients. So it's roughly around 20 to 25 hours a week. I wanted a much more flowing life between my family life and other things I'm excited about and exploring, plus my client work, which is also incredibly fulfilling. But I haven't experienced rough work anxiety in 8.5 years. I haven't experienced burnout. I love what I do. It feels very regenerative. And so all of those things are really important to me to model and explore for myself, but then also have that experience to share with clients who are oftentimes seeking something similar in that vein. And now I work with businesses across a broad spectrum, the legal field, the medical field, the creative industries, marketing, communications, advertising, production, consultancies, and have clients all over the world, and also continue to work with individuals. I also do some speaking and some workshops. I'm really just here for people who are truly interested in exploring creating that radically loved life for themselves, their business, and those around them.
Yeah, you've touched on so many things that really draw me. And one of the things that I've been thinking about since our pre-talk is that you say that, for instance, you limit the hours you award to your business every week to prevent burnout, well, for one thing, and to have more time for your family and for other interests. And I hope that's something that you will touch upon also as we go along.
Yeah, absolutely. Grind culture, the need to be hustling, like all of these words that exist, especially in relation to being a small business owner or entrepreneur or somebody who just wants to be freelance or a consultant and maybe have a bit more freedom in life. There's a lot of conditioning and narrative around needing to sort of like hustle and grind to do that. And I was really excited to do the opposite and see what would happen and experiment with that. And it, for me, I think having that as a core tenet of how I operate creates a sense of safety, security, boundaries, taking care of myself, not abandoning myself. And then that gives permission to others that I work with to do the same. And so it's really quite amazing what happens when you're co-creating with others where there's that as a shared value.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is that we're talking about things that we think we should be doing, dictated by society. And then we are going to talk about intuition, which I guess means going inward. Would you tell us what your view of intuition is?
Yes, absolutely. I have to also just shout out in preparation for this, just the universe doing what it does so beautifully. There was a wonderful podcast episode with Ezra Klein from the New York Times with Michael Pollan, the like researcher and author about, he's been writing about consciousness for years. And it's just a really powerful listen around this idea of intuition and being in the body more than in our mind. And how much there's so much focus on sort of intellectual strength and prowess and educational, you know, rational cognitive thought learning. And that, you know, when we're on our computers and working, if we aren't connected to our body and our breath and remembering like we're a whole human as we're doing it, I don't know about you, but in my, you know, full-time professional life working in super stressful, competitive, fast-paced environment, I literally felt like a disembodied head and connected to a computer or just walking around talking to people head to head. I would forget I had a body until I left the office and I'd walk outside and be like, oh, right. Or like, oh, have I, you know, even used the bathroom today? Did I eat lunch? Did I eat enough lunch for 20 minutes while I was sitting at my desk also working? You know, there's just this real disconnect between the body. And the reason I mention that is because I have now done this work with at least 1,000 people, either individually or in group settings. And when we talk about intuition, I always ask the question of people, you know, where, when I say the word intuition, what comes up for you? If you could describe where you feel it in your body, if you do, where would you say it sort of lives? And everybody hands down describes something from the neck down. Whether it's heart or gut or soul or just a sense, but the sense, to use your word so beautifully, like our sensations are in the body. Like this is our sensory messaging. So that is my favorite definition of intuition, is that it's the messaging that comes from all of our other senses that is not, you know, intellectual, cognitive, rational, just thinking, like we're, it's not the words in the mind. It's something else that can be really hard to describe because it's a feeling, usually a feeling state, a feeling of dread, a feeling of excitement, a feeling of curiosity, a feeling of, you know, the chills and the feeling the hair stand up, either because you're so excited about something or it's so touching emotionally or because of fear. It's like, wow, there are these unconscious messages coming through my system that are not fully understood, but really important messages. And if I'm not listening to those throughout the day and I'm solely focused in the mind and in the thoughts in my mind, well, then I have come to find personally, and now, you know, working with many people over the years, we are shutting off half, if not, I'd even argue 60 to 70% of really important information that is this intuitive messaging that's maybe saying something different to us than the mind. So one just really straightforward example is when I'm working with a fair amount of clients who are maybe pursuing something different professionally, their mind might want them to go after certain types of roles or conversations or people because it looks good on paper. The rational, practical, tactical mind in its cognitive processing is going to look at a list and go, well, that ticks all the boxes for all of these should-based reasons. I love that you use that word. Should. This is a should. This is a fit. I should do this, right? Like that kind of processing. And if we don't check in with our body and say, well, but how does my body feel about this opportunity? And I find once we do that, like, am I leaning forward into it? Am I sitting back away from it? Do I feel a pit in my stomach? Or do I feel excitement in my, you know, gut? Oh, that looks good on paper, but I can tell my whole body is like screaming, no. I don't want to do that. No. Wow. Okay. So if I bring those two parts together and, you know, have some reflection on that, and maybe I still go have a conversation to gather more information to see how my body feels during that conversation, then that might be even more confirming that this might be a no for me. So that's how it starts to play really tactically in like listening to our sensory messaging as we go through things that feel like they're very, you know, in the cognitive thought-based brain processing.
Benita, when one is listening to one's intuition or feeling into one's intuition, how about verbal clarity? Would intuition ever offer us verbal clarity?
That's such an interesting question. I find that I end up with words for me personally, and I've had clients reflect this back as well. Like there are words that our brain needs to use to label what we're feeling. So that is a part of the process for sure. One of the most straightforward and very like low risk, easy invitations or exercises, for lack of a better word, that I suggest and offer to clients is to take intuitive walks. And this is a really, or roles or being out in the world in whatever way you're able, is a place to explore making choices about just directions to take. Like, oh, I want to walk on that side of the street, or, oh, I want to roll, you know, that direction today and see what's down there because I'm curious. Like I want to move through the world in a way where I'm listening to what would feel best across all of my sensory messaging. And then, yes, I need to process that information through my brain to say, yes, let's go this direction. You know, there's sort of a decision that's made, a result that's made that I think is processed more cognitively, but tapping into the body, the breath, a feeling state, what would just feel best to me today? Oh, it's very chilly and windy here, so I'd like to walk in the sun. Yes, you're processing that decision-making through, you know, mental processing and cognitive thought, but where it came from, like the awareness of what you prefer and what feels best was coming from the senses.
I suppose one has to create what I could call space around these decisions, because we are often, I guess, we are so used to doing things in a certain way.
Yeah. Oh, I love all of your questions and your, like the paths your mind take to unpack these, what can seem like very confusing or detailed processes, again, if we start thinking about them a lot. But yeah, that absolutely comes up. And it's allowing ourselves to practice slowing down, to your point, creating some space so that we literally can gather a little bit more of that information rather than, you know, needing to basically shut it off and just be up in the thoughts. And then we're not connected to all of this other information. And now, is it always possible 100% of the time? Of course not. You know, things happen that we need to respond to quickly. And so our brain will kick in and do what it needs to do to get us from point A to point B. And to your point about patterns, then if we're doing that all the time, then we are really living in patterns more than intentional, more conscious, preference choosing. And I've used that word more than like decision making or phrase. What would feel best right now from, again, a healthy, nourishing perspective? I always caveat it with that. Like, what would feel best and like less harmful to myself? Oh, I need to take a break. I need to walk away from my desk or my computer. I do this often when I get emails that it may be at a first pass reading them is activating in some way. Mm-hmm. Could depend on my mood for that day. I talk very openly about all of my stages of life. I'm in perimenopause. I've got hormonal fluctuations. I could read something through a lens that's altered based on wherever I am in that process. Again, other things going on, and like, I'm going to let that sit. And if I can let it sit for an hour, great. If I can let it sit for a day, maybe I will, depending on the situation, and pause and take breaks and walk away from things and be much more responsive intentionally rather than reactive. So something like practicing the intuitive walks starts to create a new and different internal dialogue, because to your point, we're giving ourselves time and space to assess things from different parts of ourselves and then move from there. So it does take some practice to start to understand the nuances of like, what is my gut saying versus my head?
If you're working with someone who has no idea how to discern between their gut and their head, because I often have the problem, you know, some people say that that excitement and fear, those two are the same emotion. It's just interpreted differently. And I don't quite get that. So how sure. would you teach someone who is having trouble discerning? How would you teach them to know when it's intuition?
Yeah, great question. So it does, again, like I said, it takes time and it takes practice in spaces and places that feel low risk. Because it's almost nearly impossible to do right away, let's say in a fast-paced professional environment. Like there's just, the brain goes into survival mode, and so much is at stake if we're working in an environment that's providing us income. The brain is just in like, I've got to perform to keep this job, to make money. You know, there's just, that's high risk in my assessment. So we want to practice in low risk ways. So again, taking walks or getting out in the world, moving through the world in ways where we have a little space and time so it doesn't feel pressured, so we could actually slow down, create space, ask myself, how do I actually feel? And I have found with myself and others, when I first started doing this, I was like, wow, I don't even know which way I want to go. I'm so patterned. I just usually take this path and don't even think about it. So I have to stop here for a second and even ask myself, and if I give myself permission, and that's a huge word in this process, is permission giving to oneself, then to actually honor what I prefer versus doing what I should do or what I've always done or what somebody else, you know, has done before me. So I should do it that way. Like, wait, what do I even prefer? So it takes some practice asking oneself that question. And you can do it with food choices. You can do it with physical activity choices. You can do it with choices around hobbies or whatever you might be watching or listening to or reading. I was just having a conversation about this with my mother-in-law and my husband while we were traveling for spring break, about reading books that we don't prefer. Like you get in, you know, however far you get into a book, there's such conditioning around sticking stuff out that we don't like. And sometimes that's necessary. Sometimes that's necessary for, you know, things we've committed to, relationships, learning, et cetera. But if it's something as low risk as reading a book, I'm a real big fan of inviting people to put that down and find a new book that you really enjoy, because you have that choice. You have free will, you have agency to do that. And if we're not allowing ourselves that, and we're holding ourselves sort of to like self-punishing just for, commitment sake, like, whoa, well then how, what am I doing in my professional life around that? Or what am I doing in certain key relationships in my life around that? Like, am I honoring myself, you know, with an integrity of being kind and thoughtful to others? But like, how much am I abandoning myself for these beliefs when I'm not even, I don't even know what I prefer? Oh, I don't prefer this book. That's okay. The author's not going to know. I can put it down, you know. I can delete all of these newsletters that come into my inbox that don't serve me. Like, that's not aligned for me. I'm going to take the action to clean house in whatever way. Like, oh, this relationship is no longer aligned for me. I can feel it. It feels tense. It feels heavy. It feels stressful. When they reach out, I'm realizing I'm resisting responding. Okay, so don't reach out anymore. Like, these things don't have to be huge, scary actions. I find they're actually quite subtle preference choosing. Like, this is what I prefer right now, so I'm going to stop doing this thing, and I'm going to start doing this new thing, and we're going to see how that goes. And I find that helps move us through all kinds of stuck, whether it's procrastinating about certain things because we have fear and feelings around it, where it's something we really don't like to do, but we haven't been feeling into our body about that. So we haven't asked for help, or we haven't asked for somebody else to do it, or paid someone, hired someone. Like, there's all these ways we can move through obstacles in life when we're much more in tune with our intuition and our body. So to answer your question very directly, I work with each individual in terms of like who they are, what their beliefs are, with very small daily life tasks where you start to see like, oh, wow, I'm doing a few of these things that really I don't prefer. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to listen to my body and how it feels. And I'm going to like take the opposite action. I'm going to not engage in that thing, or I'm going to cancel that account of that thing that no longer serves me, or I'm going to move toward these types of foods that I'm enjoying more, that feel more, you know, healthful and regenerative for me. Oh, like, I'm actually listening to myself rather than, oh, I'm doing XYZ because this is the way my whole family does it, but I don't prefer it.
Yeah, I think you've just answered one of the questions I wanted to ask you, which is, how can intuition be used to guide action? You have just explained how one can use it to guide action.
Yep, that's it. And the more we practice it in these lower risk ways, so it becomes more comfortable, it's less scary, we get confirmation to the mind, body, spirit, nervous system, you know, the whole system, that like, oh, when I do choose what I prefer, like, it's okay. And that depends too on our family of origin and what we've learned along the way in terms of safety related to being able to advocate for ourselves. So that can take some work depending on the person's history. But once we start to see like, oh, well, maybe somebody was disappointed because I didn't continue with whatever that thing was. And I said, no, I let it go. I walked away. But they're an adult usually in these situations and they can handle disappointment, and it's actually okay. Like, the sky didn't fall.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a little uncomfortable, you know, walking away from something, but it was actually okay. And I find the more that we get confirmation that it's okay to, again, with integrity based on our relationships and commitments, that we're making different choices, the more it becomes easier and easier to do. And then that's where we turn it toward the action taking. So I usually work with people in a 12-session program when I'm coaching individuals. And it's around the middle of the session, 4, 5, 6, 7, where we really start to apply it to whatever the person is interested in exploring professionally. And that's when it takes a little bit more work, I find, to then stop and go, oh, wait, how did my body feel in that conversation with this person about something I'm talking to them about professionally? Oh, I had to like leave the conversation and then go actually do that to assess it, because it's hard to do in those moments. Okay. And then that's where it really comes into action taking. I've had a multitude of people, again, to my like how it looks on paper versus how it feels example earlier, go down the road of multiple conversations, but their mind is like, well, this seems good for all these reasons. Very rational, you know. List on paper reasons, and then they go have the conversation and they're like, oh my gosh, based on all this work I've been doing to really understand what I prefer, if I'm really honest, there's so much about that that doesn't feel good, or that I see red flags now, or it's not my, you know, I've gotten all my preferences down. I do that work with clients as well to get these preferences then down on paper. So you do have words, you do have some structure that you can come back to and hold yourself accountable. And then you start to see like, wow, my mind out of fear would override what I've now felt and captured, and I'm confirming that I actually prefer. And then that's where I find much more aligned action taking, which is the phrase I use, starts to happen. Like, oh, I'm actually making choices that feel like uncomfortable to my brain, but feel much better to my body.
Yeah, that's a wonderful description. Benita, one thing I really wanted to ask you was what the relationship is between intuition and self-confidence. Maybe you could start by telling us how you view self-confidence.
Yeah, I really, this was one of the main aspects that I didn't understand about being a human, especially like developing as a young adult and adult in the world. Because I came up as a ballet dancer, which is such a hyper-competitive, hyper-specialized, you know, very disciplined, intense, competitive world, it was this very catch-it-when-you-can experience for me. Sometimes I would feel very confident. It depended on the director or the choreographer or the teacher or the room I happened to be in at any given time, how I felt that day. It was some days very confident, some days super insecure, and just, I don't know, I didn't have a grasp of how one truly developed a sense of self, honestly, because that's the piece that was missing for me. Like a true sense of taking care of myself, understanding myself, and also showing up and being of service to others. So I didn't know that those were interconnected. Like showing up and doing esteemable acts, oftentimes in service of a purpose, a mission, an alignment, a sense of like, this again feels right to me, like this aligns for me, this feels fulfilling. I love the word fulfilling in relation to this conversation. I didn't know that becoming more aligned and being true to oneself so that then you create more fulfilling experiences for yourself ultimately creates more of a sense of trust in oneself, which to me is that's confidence. Confidence is trusting yourself with yourself. Like I will take care of myself. I will not abandon myself. I will have boundaries when necessary. I will say yes to things that feel new, so scary, to back to your point about fear versus excitement. Right? Two sides of the same coin is the way I like to describe the fear excitement challenge. Because there are things we absolutely need to be afraid of, right? We're being chased by a bear. We need to, you know, do the things to get to safety or to keep ourselves safe. But if we're being asked to do something that's new that we've never done before, but that we know would maybe stretch us, right? We would expand in a new way in our abilities, our sense of self, having a new experience, that I find is like the excitement side of fear. So I always ask people to, when they're assessing fear versus excitement, to look at it in terms of like a line graph in front of you, like a spectrum in front of you from, you know, 0 to 100, let's say. And is it 51% exciting? Just over that line, is it just that much more exciting versus fear-based? Then to me, that's a yes. Is it like 49% or less exciting and actually more on the like, I've got some real reservations about this? And that's to be listened to equally. Like there's understandable reasons to be afraid of certain people, situations, opportunities, experiences, and say, no, that doesn't feel right for me right now. So that's how I assess that out. And then I just find in everything we've discussed already, the what do I prefer? Take an action from what I prefer. If it includes other people, being able to communicate about, hey, I know we've always done it this way, but I would like to try it this way this time. See what happens with that. Gather more information. Or
I know that if I show up for this group or these people or this experience, it creates a sense I've been of service. I feel a sense of self-esteem in doing so, in doing the right thing, in showing up for others. And then that generates this sense of self. So it's like two-pronged in terms of not abandoning oneself, learning more about oneself and one's preferences, honoring those more often, and then also being of service to others in ways that are also like safe, have boundaries, feel fulfilling. And those two things combined, I find like, oh, we actually move through the world in ways that are esteemable or confidence building, that create self-esteem and confidence. It's not that we have it or we don't.
Thank you. That is putting it in such lucid terms. And I especially appreciate what you said about the graph, you know, of fear and excitement. Yeah. I am going to use that in future.
Yeah, and really visual. So I love to use ways in which my mind can like assess the feelings in the body, right? To your earlier question about like, how do you know?
Yeah.
And then be able to like see it visually in a way where you're have created your own assessment tool, basically. Like, how can I put into words and define what I'm feeling in my body?
A quick note on what I do. In my 30 years as a journalist, I've seen how often people seeking health and wellness support feel unsure where to turn for providers who truly resonate with them. Through my articles and podcasts, I aim to offer reliable information while introducing audiences to trusted practitioners and resources. My platform, marietsneeman.co.za, brings together insights from more than 160 experts on physical and mental health, relationships, and parenting. You're welcome to use the search function or browse the site for relevant information. In fact, you can stream or download any podcast right there on my website, or listen to Calm, Clear, and Helpful on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other platforms. If you're a wellness provider keen on expanding your reach and credibility, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. I offer a clearly structured process and journalistic insight to help you connect deeply with your audience. If you happen to be a first-time podcast guest, you'll feel prepared before we press record. You'll find more information under Services on my website, or simply send an email to mariette@marietsneeman.co.za. Thank you for listening to this episode. Now, let's get back to my guest. It seems to me, Benita, that a lot of what you do is creating clarity. And I'm sure that helps your clients to such a huge extent.
Yeah. A component of, like, I love puzzles. I love, again, like taking things from a movement perspective, like choreography, and then and helping them find their order. Like there's an order and a rhythm and a flow I find for myself, for others. And it's visual, it's movement based. And then it's also like the pieces of a puzzle starting to fit together. And that experience, I always say, if I had taken some completely other path in life, I would have been an investigator of some kind. Like I love to dig in and investigate and then find like the root. What is the root, the core of whatever this might be, the fear, the limiting belief, the thing that's in the way, the hurdle, and then let's go take some action And that's what I find the difference between coaching and any other type of like psychiatry, psychology, therapy, counseling support, which I'm a huge proponent of. I have, you know, used those supports throughout my life as well, and are so important to understanding a lot of the origins of where our beliefs come from. And then I find coaching is like the action, at least the way in which I operate with clients is coaching can be very action oriented. So then you can just look at the hurdle and we talk about it a little bit. And if it needs to be discussed more deeply, please, you know, find the appropriate professional support for that, therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist. But we're just going to try something, and you might just jump over the hurdle in terms of daily living with whatever that thing might be that's, you know, felt like a block. So yeah, it's very much clarity and then putting that clarity into action that I find creates results for people more quickly than other modalities.
Yes, I do like that, because it's not as if one has a moment of clarity and then you're done. It is the flow which has to come after that.
Absolutely. And yeah, the experiential learning is also a phrase I use a lot. Mm-hmm. I just went through this. So we lost our dog in November of this past year, and it was very traumatic and not expected, and moved through lots of the moments of grief with that, and in a much lighter place now. But we would take her to the beach where we were just traveling. And so she wasn't there with us this year. And I wanted to do that purposely to see how it felt to not travel with a pet, to not, you know, that would be a responsibility that wouldn't be there and that would be interesting to experience. And we came home and I said to my husband and my son, that was really interesting. The weight of responsibility of having her with us is less than the missing of having a pet and an animal in the house. Like, I would much rather do the little bit of extra work to have her with us than not have an animal. And I didn't know that until we had the experience. I needed to go experience that before I would know. And then it quiets everything in my mind. Mm. It's like, are we going to get another dog? Or are we going? No, we are. And we will in time. I really, having the experience is so much more worth it than, you know, the additional responsibility. But I didn't know that until I had the experience. And so I really focus on that with a human exploring anything is, our mind is full of not knowing. Our mind is full of questions and considerations and pros and cons lists and thinking through things. Like in the recovery community, there's a slogan, like, figure it out is not a solution. Like, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to, I'm going to sit here and think about it until I know what to do. And I find usually that creates spinning and not often like a clear next step. But if we go experiment with something, and actually have actual experiential learning, and then can go, oh, I know how I feel. This is how I felt in this situation. This resolves any questioning I was having. And then it's just done like that. And there's no more time taken up in the mind.
Thank you. Now, your business is called Create Radical Love. How can one build, and I think I'm quoting from your website, I'm not sure, how can one build a radically loved life across relationships, work, and identity?
Yeah, it's definitely building on all the things we've just discussed. I would say, I would argue, at least in my experience, it's definitely come from being open to help of some kind, whether it's a program or a coach or a therapist or whoever it might be, an inspirational creative person, a course that you take where you're like, okay, I am going to explore new ways of being. I find it usually needs to start there in some way, because usually people are seeking creating a radically loved life because there are parts of their life they're really not loving. So it's usually desiring to design and create a radically loved life usually comes from recognizing there are parts that are really out of alignment. And then having that desire, reaching out, getting new inspiration, getting insight from someone else. I am always being surprised by, which is so funny because I know very little. I think especially the older I get, the more I realize I don't know, which is super freeing. And I love operating from that more humble and open and curious place. But like being open to inspiration from outside sources to a degree, obviously not giving ourselves away to that, but like, oh wow, my thinking has been stuck here. So starting with that, and then moving through some of the things we've discussed that come up in a lot of these different environments, which is listening more again to the body, yes, processing it through the mind, honoring oneself a bit more, taking different actions, seeing how they feel, knowing that there's no one right way, I think is really important as well. Like, we can take in these inspirations from others, but then do the experiential learning and see what truly feels best to us. I love when I'm working with a client and we discuss experimenting with something. They go out in the world, they try it, they take a new class, they reach out and have an informational conversation with somebody, they whatever it is, they go do the thing. And they come back and they're like, oh my gosh, I totally don't know. I don't want to do that at all. And that had been like weighing on me, that it was this thing I was considering and maybe I should do it, or I thought it was this and it turns out I learned all this stuff and it's actually more like that and that's not for me. Like, oh, the clarity of going and trying things and then knowing, wow, I'm really clear about what I prefer and what I don't. And every once in a while, there's a trickier situation where it just takes more information gathering to get to that clarity. But for the most part, it happens much more quickly again than just sitting and thinking about it. And then you start taking, like, wash and repeat those actions. Sit with oneself. What do I prefer? Go try the new thing. Gather the information. And what I find starts to happen is this radically loved life almost feels more like it's appearing than it's like hard work. It's very, oh, I'm listening to myself. I've said no to this thing that's no longer aligned. Oh, look, it made space. And now this other thing is showing up. Oh, I have so much less anxiety and fear. I just had a client who just faced something that there's lots of like heavy beliefs around it that was, they didn't even realize how much it was weighing on them. And they went and did the thing and were like, oh my gosh, all of that past belief, fear, judgment, it's just gone. So I would argue it's very much like introspection, working on sense of self, and then taking these more aligned actions. And then that really starts, my life in the last 8 years has just been this unfolding of a dance with the universe, I would say, much more than me like trying to control from my mind things that I ultimately can't control. And that is definitely not a loved life.
Yeah, and then that takes us back to the word freedom you used previously.
Yeah, it's much more free. And the irony is that it's really a freedom from self. I think for those of us who are interested in this type of exploration, right, like sort of the inner journey and who am I and what do I prefer and what's meaningful to me, what creates fulfillment for me, how do I align more to that and try to find it. You know, it's not interesting to everyone for sure. But for those who it is, it's a very freeing process to like get out of your own way, to start to see like, wow, I've been holding on to these beliefs or I've had resistance for various reasons. And sure, maybe it comes from understandable fear, but maybe I can ask for some help and try it a different way. It's a much more gentle process. It's a much more compassionate process. That's something I'm very, very passionate about, is motivating oneself from compassion and ease and like doing no harm rather than motivating oneself from the critical self and the harmful based, harsh, judgmental self. I motivated myself from the critical, harmful, judgmental self for many, many, many years, and it worked until it didn't. And then I found it to be unbelievably unproductive. So that's also a frame in which I work with clients, is it can feel very scary to a lot of the people that I work with, I would argue are high achieving, very motivated, driven, wanting to create out in the world, doing things. And oftentimes those folks created that motivation, or that motivation was developed within them from very competitive environments. Whether it was like team sports as a young person, or highly competitive educational environment, high expectations from family of origin and themselves. And that it's happening earlier and earlier for people, I find, mid-20s, 30s, definitely if it hasn't happened by 40s, then it will. Mm-hmm. Where you're just like, this no longer serves me. Why am I hurting myself to motivate myself? So that's a component of all of this as well, in terms of like designing and living a radically loved life, is will I still show up and do things if I'm not like harming myself in the process, like hurting myself to motivate myself? And it took me some time. It took me some time to trust that I wasn't just going to disappear, or I was going to stop taking action if I wasn't, you know, in my head saying like, you have to do this, or you should do this, or, you know, you're not enough, or you're bad if you don't do X, Y, Z. To shift that language internally, it's wild actually how much more productive with ease I am than I was before. And that's the freedom.
Yeah. Thank you. Benita, where can listeners learn more about your work, and where can they follow you?
Yeah, absolutely. The best place to find out more about me and to contact me is through my website, and that is createradicallove.com. I am on Instagram under Benita_Condi. And those are probably the best two places. I'm also on LinkedIn and Facebook, also Benita Condi.
Thank you. I'll put all that information in the podcast notes. And then may I ask you a fun question?
Sure, please.
Okay. I was fascinated by the fact that you started out as a professional ballet dancer in New York. So, my question is, if you could be a member of the animal kingdom expressing the poise and grace of a ballet dancer, what would you be?
Oh, wow. Oh, I think I have two answers, because the animals that I identify with most are not the most graceful, which is fascinating. Actually, I love the way that you asked that question. So I think in terms of the grace piece, a horse comes to mind. They're incredibly intuitive, incredibly sensitive to energies and vibrations around them, incredibly smart, have really interesting relationships with humans, and are just, you know, a horse running. You know, gorgeous. So that's the first animal that comes to mind in relation to your question. But the animals that I really gravitate towards for some reason are like these like big solid animals, whether it's like a hippo or an elephant or a cow. Like I love them.
Yeah, I think you would love visiting South Africa. I don't know if you've been, but yeah, we are very fortunate in that we can experience them in the wild. So you'll be able to have your fill of elephants and hippos and those really grounded animals.
Oh, yes, I would love to. I have a dear friend from childhood who lives in South Africa with her family, so it's definitely been a dream.
Thank you, Benita. I've learned so much from you, and I'm so glad that I'm going to edit the episode, because then I get to listen to everything again and to integrate it more. Thank you very, very much for all the insights you've shared, and not only insights that you gathered with your mind, but insights that you've lived.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you for your wonderful, deep, really insightful question.
And to our listeners, it was good of you to spend time with us. It would greatly benefit me and my platform if you'd subscribe to this podcast series. And if this episode struck a chord with you, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for free podcasts and articles on physical and mental health, romantic relationships, parenting, and navigating life's transitions. To follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The weekly podcast series Calm, Clear, and Helpful is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other platforms. It's hosted and produced by me, with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday. at 9.